And welcome on into a Super Sunday night here on HeatWeb Sports, Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. As always, 10 o'clock every weekend. Tim Unglesby and Angel tonight with you here in Las Vegas. My co-host, Tom Barton, Sports Zone. Tom Barton back in New York. Tommy, it is a special edition of HeatWeb Sports. It's the Father's Day edition.
Happy Father's Day, Tim. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. I hope you guys enjoyed the Father's Days out there. You know, I'm sure there was a lot of barbecues going on, right? I'm sure dads were cooking. People went out, enjoyed themselves. Maybe a couple of cocktails were flowing. I hope you guys got a chance to watch a little sports. That is always on the docket for a good Father's Day. But to everybody out there, happy Father's Day.
Couldn't agree more, Tommy, and you're right. Barbecue, restaurants, drinks, sun, what a pool, whatever it may be. Father's Day is always wonderful, and you're right. Watch the sports all day long, and then end the Father's Day with 2 hours of great sports talk here on HeatWeb Sports. And Tom, you know, obviously we're going to talk baseball tonight, and we're going to talk the two finals that are left to be played. But Father's Day, and we don't talk a lot about it on this show. In fact, I don't remember even the last time we spoke about it, but do you watch golf? Were you intrigued by what happened today at the U.S. Open?
I will watch golf here and there. Didn't see a lick of it today at the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open, to me, this is not to bash it. It was dull this year. It didn't do enough to grab my interest, Tim.
So tell me if this is degenerate gambling behavior or not, okay? I'm scrolling through the app last night. The mobile app, looking at the lines for the baseball from today, which, by the way, I don't know if you were on it, but Corbin Burnes, again, was another winner. And I look at this. So I don't know. It was an icon on the app for the U.S. Open Golf, and it was like you get – I think it was 18% bonus booster for betting it, right? So I'm just looking at it just to look at it. And – this year's winner, DeChambeau, right? He was minus 120 to win the U.S. Open at that point. He had a four-stroke lead going into the final round. And the next closest was, of course, Rory McIlroy, four behind him. And I'm like, 120, get 18% bonus. So I just bet a little bit, Tom, on Bryson. He almost ended up screwing me there in the back nine, but he gets it done today. Did I commit degenerate gambling behavior there?
No, listen, I think the bonuses are there, Tim, to tempt, you know, people, right? The bonuses are there to make something a little bit more interesting, we'll say. And I think you used it in the right spot. You have a favorite. He's a slight favorite. You get a little bit of a bonus. You have a comfort level. And you're sitting home watching it. I mean, that's it. When people ask me, you know, how do I use these bonuses? How do I use these extras? How do I use, you know, whatever the sports book is handing out? That's almost precisely the spot that I like it. Don't take this huge underdog and try to make the big bucks. No. If you're sitting home, you're not sure you should make a bet. You're watching the game anyway. You know, you have a pretty solid lean in one direction. No, that wasn't degenerate, Tim. I think that was having a little fun as opposed to always looking at this as just pure business like me and you often do.
Yeah, and like I said, it wasn't a sizable bet. I bet more on the baseball game than I did on the golf because that's what I know. That's what I follow. That's what I'm capping. But I figured world-class golfer who has won consistently, right, big events, against a guy who hasn't won a huge event in Lord knows how long now, and he's given me four strokes, Tom, that's a lot. You'd have to literally choke that lead away, which he almost did, Tom, but luckily Rory choked it right back at the end.
You know, you talk about golf and choking, Tim, and Sundays and Father's Days. I mean, how many times does it feel like we've used that term during the U.S. Open on a Sunday, right? That they choke it away. How many times do you feel like it's right in front of them? It's directly theirs for the taking in a lot of ways. And we're sitting back hours later going, man, yep, they choked that away. It happens all the time.
It happened quite frequently when Tiger Woods was involved, it was guys choking the lead away and letting him win them.
It's funny you say that because people always said, well, Tiger came up and, you know, Tiger had a miraculous comeback in it. Listen, take nothing for Tiger. Yes, he did. But it always did have to coincide with somebody looking over their shoulder and saying, uh-oh, Tiger's coming.
Right. Okay. Just want to make sure I wasn't sliding into the degenerate world. So I'm okay then, right, Tom? I'm okay.
Yeah, you're okay. Don't worry about it. That's the time to do it. Small favorite. You didn't go heavy. You were watching the event. You used a booster. Yeah, that's fine.
All right. And just to recap the Father's Day. So obviously.
By the way, the only booster I will recommend.
Yes. Definitely not the other ones, Brian. So for Father's Day, obviously, Tom, that our gift for Father's Day is our children. You have a new brand new baby boy. So you have a special extra gift this year. But did the children come together and get Daddy Barton a nice little gift?
Yeah, you know, it sounds cliche, Tim. I still like the homemade stuff. Look, I hate to be like that, but if I want something, I'll go buy it myself. Right. You know, it's kind of just the way it is. But I do like the homemade stuff. I especially like the stuff that they do at school. So this year, you know, my daughter drew a picture of me and they asked her questions. The same thing with my son. They both had to draw a picture, ask questions, and the answers to the questions are the gift. Now, I got a couple of nice things. You know, I got a pair of flip-flops. I really need a new pair of that. A nice Skechers pair. Great. I got a couple of you know, belts that they wanted to give me, and a really nice picture frame with all three kids in it. So I think Finnegan went shopping really well, but I do like the stuff at school that kind of, you know, what is daddy? You know, what is the best thing he's taught me? What are the things that that they love? And that stuff just resonates forever. How about you, Tim? What did you get today?
Funny you bring up the school part of it, that kids out here have been out for a month already and yours are still going to school. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I got a nice card from the two kids, and they got me I got a new pair of sneakers, which is fine, but mom came through and got, so in 2 weeks I'll be in Anaheim. I go watch the Angels play the Tigers, and mom actually got us seats on the third base, so behind the Angel dugout, and it's about 10 rows up, so that's pretty nice, man.
That's very cool. I'm going to the Yankee game with Tommy, just me and Tommy, on Thursday. Taking him out of school for the Thursday daytime 4:00 game, Yankees Orioles.
Oh, that's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Well, good. We all had a good Father's Day. We hope everybody listening had one as well. Even if you don't have kids, you can still celebrate Father's Day. You may never know who you're a father to, but we don't need to get into any of that, right, Tom? All joking aside, we will talk Major League Baseball in hour two, and Yankees Orioles is going to be fun to watch all summer long as they meet again here, like Tom said, here in the middle of the week. But I guess we'll start with what we saw last, Tom, which was last night. The Edmonton Oilers staved off elimination. They now trail that best-of-seven series with Florida 3-1. They did put up an 8-spot, Tommy, on the Panthers last night. Do you think this is just a proverbial Band-Aid over the bullet hole here? Are they just stretching it out a couple days longer than it should be here? Is Florida just trying to win this on their home ice? What do you think happens here? Did Edmonton May... maybe that 8-goal outburst spark something that we could see the rest of the way out, or we're just biding time here in the next 2 or 3 days?
A little bit of both. I mean, I think we all knew what this Edmonton offense could be, right? I think we are all very well aware what they should have been able to explode, and they gave something to their home fans. I think that, yeah, there was a spark there. Yeah, that Florida should be nervous. They should be a little bit nervous here. Maybe not to lose a series, but going into a game five, they should be a little concerned that, uh-oh, wait a minute, eight-goal outburst, yeah, maybe this could happen again. With that being said, I don't see a coming back from 3-0 situation. That's not feasible. It's not feasible because they're going to be playing two of the next three inside Florida, right? So, I think it would have been a little bit different if they had that 8-goal outburst and then were going to Edmonton. Then you go, okay, maybe, right? Maybe. But there's too much against them. I think that they did what they had to do. They're scary next game. I'm not automatically saying that Florida wins that game. I think they probably do. But I'm not saying that automatically they win that game. But I don't think that they're in danger of losing the series. I don't think Edmonton is looking more dangerous overall in the series than they were. But I will say that, you know, it was nice for the fans. They gave them the one, right? The one win. Lots of excitement, just the way you want it. McDavid, Draisaitl look good. For the fans, that's pretty cool. But overall, I wouldn't be worried if I was Florida. But I'd stop paying attention, if that makes sense.
Yeah, if your lasting impression in front of your home fans is that this was going to be it, that's a good way to end the year in their mind. And, hey, you know what? We ran into a Florida team that maybe it was their time, right, Tommy? They made it to the finals last year, back this year. Team that's it's a force to be reckoned with, and maybe Edmonton just wasn't up to that caliber. So we'll close the year out. Nice way to end it. Better team wins. But like you said, Tom, I would have thought this would be different as well if they were heading back to Edmonton, because momentum's a big thing. So yes, they have momentum, but yes, now they have to travel all the way back to Sunrise to play this game. Still down 3-1. You can't expect Bobrovsky to look like that again, right? You can't. That's just not, the track record doesn't speak that way to say that he's able to get shredded again like that. Obviously, I think once they got their fourth or fifth goal, the rest of them don't count to me either, because Florida wasn't coming back in that game. So the score is a little bit blown up, not indicative of what we saw most of the game. I will say this, though, Tom, right? 3-1, keep an eye on them, but this should get done. If Edmonton finds a way to win, and now it's 3-2 going back to Edmonton, that's where things get hairy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where you could go, okay, I still think that it's still in Florida's court, Tim. You know, because if you really look at it, look, do you believe that this Edmonton team, with this goalie, with the situation that they're playing in, with the people they're playing against in Florida, are going to win a game 7 in Florida? I just don't. I mean,
no.
You know, can they steal the next game in Florida? Yes. Can they go back home and make it, oh my goodness, it's a 3-3 game? Yeah, they could. And everybody and the world will love Edmonton, and everybody will be on the Oilers, and McDavid will be McJesus again, and everything will go crazy. But to win a game 7 in Sunrise, Florida will be just a tall, tall order.
It's almost the same task that Florida was put in, or put situation that Florida was put in, right, Tom, is you have to win 4. Can you win 4 in a row? Florida couldn't do it, but in order for Edmonton to win this series, they have to win 4 in a row. And we already know, number one, no matter who you're playing, that's a tough task to succeed in doing, but let alone the caliber of the Florida Panthers, right, Tom?
I mean, that's why people don't come back from 0-3 deficits. Because there's no room for error. There's no margin for error. And when you're a pro, whether it be the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, whatever it might be, it's so unbelievably rare to come back from 0-3, because the caliber of teams by the time you get to the championship are so tight and so close that it's a razor-thin margin. And now you have to go out there and be absolutely perfect. You just don't see it.
Florida ends this tomorrow night, Tommy?
Tuesday night. Yeah, I tend to think so.
I think so.
Like I said, I don't think I'm betting on it, because I can see Edmonton stealing that game, but I think that they do. I think that being down in Florida is just too much. I think Edmonton had the perfect game, the perfect atmosphere. There's an immediate letdown. No matter how much you want to talk about not letting down, there's an immediate psychological letdown when you are up 3-0 in a series. and you're on the road and you know you're going back home. I mean, I honestly believe it was just a perfect storm for Edmonton to get the W.
Was this Stanley Cup final a dud, Tom?
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah. They had, forget about the teams, which obviously were probably not what the NHL wanted in the Florida Panthers. Sure, they wanted Edmonton, but not Florida. But the idea that you had an absolute dynamic player in Connor McDavid who didn't take over, right? I mean, he just didn't. If this was, look, if Edmonton was down 3-1, but McDavid had 5 goals this series, I don't think it would have been a dud. If Edmonton went down 3-1 and Draisaitl, you know, had 5 assists and you know, there was 3 or 4 goals by McDavid, you go, ah, yeah, this is kind of cool. It's going back and forth. At least we have to. No, no, no. The fact that McDavid has basically been quieted, Draisaitl has been quieted, Florida has made the game dull. Yeah, I think that this is a dull finals because of the way it played out.
I was talking to you earlier in the week before game 4, and we both agreed we can't even blame Skinner for this, right, Tom? The offense just up until game 4 was non-existent. Florida has done a wonderful, superb job.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous to me to have people sit back and blame Skinner. Look, he hasn't been great, okay? But when you have those two guys, I don't think anybody's going to argue two of the top 5 players in the league, and you can't get anything. Forget about goals, Tim. They couldn't get shots on goals. It was so bad you could not get shots on goals. That's pathetic. And I mean, that does dull a series. That drags. And Edmonton's looking at every reason in the book to go out there and blame their goalie because they're used to doing so. And going into the series, we thought if Edmonton loses this series, it's going to be because of that. It's going to be because of him. Except it doesn't play. It didn't play out that way, right? This is purely an offensive problem.
We'll see. We'll see what happens in Game 5 on Tuesday. I mean, it's very possible, Tom. Highly unlikely, but it is possible that come Saturday night we could be talking about a Game 7. But I'm with you. I think this one probably ends in 48 hours.
Look, I hope we're wrong, Tim. I hope me and you are sitting back and we are talking about a Game 7. And there's credence to that. I mean, there is possibility to that. The Game 7 could be there. Here we go. Reality is it's probably not. Unfortunately, the NHL season's probably going to end before we speak again.
Let me ask you one more NHL note. Let me ask you your opinion on this. The team that was the Arizona Coyotes was bought in April by the owner of the Utah Jazz, Ryan Smith. So they will play next year in Salt Lake City. Relocation effort here. So Arizona to Salt Lake. And Tom, the name for next year will be the Utah Hockey Club. So I guess there is a survey circulating amongst, was it season ticket holders in Utah to vote on what they would like the team name to be. But I guess they're going to draw this out now. So next year, as far as right now, the Utah Hockey Club. It's kind of lame, don't you think?
One of the more idiotic things in sports. Look, you said it, drag it out. What are we doing here? I mean, honestly, what are we doing? You know how horrible it was to sit back and have the Washington Football Club, right? We are not a European nation. We are not a European fan base. It sounds moronic and idiotic to call things the football club or the hockey club. It's flat out idiotic. Americans don't want it. We don't accept it, okay? Number one. Number two, are your marketing people and the people in your higher-ups, are they so incompetent that they need another year to come up with the proper name? Are we really at that point where you have they probably paid hundreds of thousands of dollars each. A marketing department that I'm assuming is a $1 million enterprise cannot come up with the name and they need more time? This is ludicrous. And what you're going to go with in the interim is that. Look, I would, if you needed more, first of all, the more time thing, Tim, is idiotic. Okay, it's stupid. That's number one. The more time thing doesn't make any sense. But if you did need more time, why not just keep it with, you know, the former, right? The Coyotes or whatever it might be. Just keep it with the former for the year and the transitional year. Okay. So now you're going to go make jerseys, make pamphlets, hats, all this stuff with the football club on it, knowing that the year after that, that you're going to have to go out there and go make another team name as well. And I'm telling you, what they're probably trying to do is trying to milk every dollar they can out of merchandise for the new fan base. So they have to go buy two different jerseys and two different versions of hats and everything else. It's idiotic no matter what the reasoning. Is it to grab a couple of bucks? Is it that they couldn't come up with a name in time? Whatever it is, it's pure idiotic. And it's just a total and complete failure on everybody on every level to not have a name of your hockey team. And by the way, Tim, the idea that they're telling us now they need another year as opposed to taking some time. Don't worry, guys. We'll have it figured out in a month or two. How long can it possibly be to figure out the name of a hockey club? I mean, come on.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's a complete, in my mind, it's a money trap, right? Like you said, they're printing jerseys right now that say Utah on the front of them in their color scheme. They're printing hats right now. They're printing T-shirts right now. And when they decide a new name, they're going to be printing them again, and everybody's got to go out and buy another one now because that's just what you do, right? There were 20 names, Tom, on this survey. They couldn't whittle it down to like three and say, hey, each of the three, you guys need to vote by this date so we can get it in to the league and have it all official and approved. Nah, they're milking this out because Ryan Smith, Tom, he paid $1.2 billion for this franchise. I'm sure he wants to recoup some of that money. If I were them, I would have spent the money. There was a team in the AHL. I'm pretty sure they're still there, actually. I don't follow AHL hockey anymore, but they were called the Utah Grizzlies, Tom, right? Why not just buy that from them and go with that name? It's already known. It's established. The colors are already set. They've been in Salt Lake forever. Just do that. I don't know what's so hard about it, but yes, I'm with you. Complete money grab, I think. They already got deposits, Tom, from 23,000 people for season tickets for next year already. So they know what they're doing as far as these people are going to – it's completely open the wallets and take whatever you want out of there because that's what's going to happen here. So I'm with you on that. I think it's a sham, basically, is what I'm saying.
Well, here's the thing, Tim. I'm not in Utah, and I won't be a Utah whatever they are fan, okay? I have no attachment to them. I have nothing to do with them. But if I were in Utah, and all of a sudden, you know, this is what they were shoving down my throat, wouldn't you kind of take the other way? Wouldn't you start to kind of go the other way and be like, I'm not buying that. Like, I'm not buying into this nonsense. I'm not going down that road. Wouldn't you kind of all of a sudden start to have a little animosity to a team that you're supposed to be 100% rooting for? I mean, this is where we're at right now, is that instead of grabbing that fan base and saying, hey, come with us, we're going to be the fun team, we're going to be the great team, we're going to be the team that is enjoyable, we're going to be your new to hometown team, all of a sudden people are going to be like, yeah, I'm not buying that jersey. I'll wait. I don't even know who they are. It's removing a fan base before you even have a fan base.
Heatwave Sports Zone Chris Wynn says they should be the Utah Yeti. Nice logo, nice mascot. The Utah Yeti. What do you think about that, Tom?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It stands out, right?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I didn't know. The only reason that I don't know about that, I thought from my time in Seattle, which I spent, you know, quite some time in Seattle, I thought that Washington State kind of claimed the Yeti. And some of Canada. I didn't know it was like a Utah thing. So, I mean, again, I'm okay with it. That's fine. Anything but the football club, hockey club, the whatever. I'm out. I'm out completely on just having no name. We are not European soccer. We'll never be European soccer. Nobody wants to be European soccer. European soccer is maybe the dullest thing in the history of the world. We don't want any association with it. Why push that down our throat?
And one more point before we close out for the first segment here on Heatwave Sports tonight on a Super Sunday, a Father's Day edition of Heatwave Sports. This year's Stanley Cup Final, Tom, Edmonton, Florida. And that was at coming into Game 4 with a 3-0 deficit for Edmonton, is up 43% over last year's Stanley Cup Final, Florida, Vegas. And I know people are going to say, well, it's on ABC, it's different. Not every game's on ABC as well, right? It's ESPN Plus. Last year's games were on TNT and TBS. I don't want to hear it. Vegas Golden Knight fans out there yipping and yapping about how boring the Stanley Cup is going to be without the Vegas Golden Knights. It's up, Tom, 43%, including a 1.9 share in game number 2 and a 1.8 share in game 3. Proof positive is right there, man. I don't know what else to say, Tom. I'm just reading numbers. I'm reading statistics.
Yeah, I've said it before on the air. The Vegas Golden Knights' reach and outward personality and outward popularity around the country is quite different than what they believe that they are. This is a McDavid effect. This is an Edmonton effect. This is a Canadian effect. Sure, that's all there. But it's also Vegas, by and large, were a boring story. They were a boring team. That's fine. You got a cup. Doesn't matter how boring you are. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care at all if they were my team, right? It doesn't matter. Yeah. But facts are facts. Like you said, you're reading numbers. You're not giving commentary. You're reading numbers. I'm the one adding the commentary.
By the way, Tom, I wanted to give you an update. Jonathan Marchessault, still no word from Vegas about going back there. So
It's getting to that point of Tim might have been right, huh, Tim? I said he wasn't going to resign. You said they were going to play games with him. Looks like both of those things are happening.
There are literally listeners chomping at the bit to blast us. But the longer it goes, the worse it's going to get. Or the chances of him coming back get fewer and fewer. Trust me, this is just a business at this point.
Yeah, and you said it, business. It's a business move. It's not even a hockey move at this point. He was never going to be a hockey priority. He is a business priority first.
Tom Barton, Tim Unglesby, Angel with you on a Super Sunday night. Take our first time out. The NBA Finals resume tomorrow. Game number 5 in Boston. Tommy will break that down for us on the way back. It's Heatwave Sports. It's Fox Sports Radio.
Be a part of the show. 876-1340. Or text Fox to 69187 and your message. This is Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports 1340.
And 98.9 FM. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton. Super Sunday night. Your Father's Day edition. NBA Finals resume tomorrow, 5:30 Pacific over on ABC. The Mavericks in Boston to take on the Celtics. The series is 3-1. The Celtics tomorrow night, 6.5-point favorites. Tom, last Sunday you and Chris did a great job breaking down the first two games of the series. In fact, Sunday was game 2, and Boston had went up 2-0 heading to Dallas. We all figured Boston would win this. We all assumed it would go 5 or 6, right? That's what we thought, possibility of a 7, but I think we were all kind of in the 5 to 6 ballpark range. We're still on pace for that. Is there anything you saw in that game 4, which essentially, in my opinion, was a throwaway game after they had gotten out to a nice, solid lead? Is there anything in that changes your mind, much like we just spoke about in segment 1 with the Stanley Cup final, Tommy, and it being a 3-1 deficit? Is this anything that Celtic fans should be worried about, or does this get wrapped up tomorrow night in Boston?
No, I think it gets wrapped up. You know, when I did my preview before the series began, I went back and forth, and I did it here, and I did it on my podcast, and I went back and forth, and I continued to say, you know, I'm going to stop myself short here of going all in on the Celtics sweeping the series. And you could hear it in my voice as I continued to talk about it and continued to go. I really wanted to take the Celtics. I really wanted to take them to sweep. And I continued to just sit back and say, you know, Luka's too good for that. I think Luka goes off one game. That was my theory. Luka was just going to go crazy, and that's it. Well, he didn't. But I did give Dallas one game. Here's the thing. I think that the Boston Celtics close it out tomorrow. It'll be in five. I predicted six. It'll be in five. I think that you know, the spread's 6.5 or 7, sure. But I do still believe this. And here's what's scary, Celtics fans. I still believe Luka has that game in him. The capability of just absolutely taking over a game like very few players on the planet can do. And I'm talking about a crazy Luka game where you sit back and you're looking at him and you're going, wow, okay, he did a 40, you know, 15 and 12 type of game. I mean, he has that ability in him. Against Boston, 30, 32, 27, 29, 10, 11. You know, in game two, 32, 11 and 11 was pretty close. I mean, that was pretty close to what I was thinking about. That kind of just absolutely out of his mind type of game. He did it against Minnesota in game two as well, 32, 10, and 13. He has these games in him that I absolutely could see Luka taking over, even against the number three defense in the league in Boston. So I believe Boston closes out tomorrow. I believe Boston closes it out relatively easy tomorrow. They're at home. Everything is lined up for them to close it out. But beware of that Luka game. That Luka game where he will not allow his team to go home. And that was what kept me away from taking this team to sweep, was because I was afraid of the Luka game. That threat is still there. I don't think they're in any danger of losing the series. I think they take tomorrow's game relatively easily. But the Luka game and the threat of the Luka game is still kind of hanging out there, Tim.
When you compare the two series, or the sports, let's put it that way, Florida, Edmonton, and you look at the discrepancy in talent between the two teams. Do the same now with the NBA, Tom, Mavericks, Celtics. When you look at the Mavericks Celtics series, and we'll go one through, I guess they're going, what, about 8 or 9 deep at the most on each roster that are actually playing minutes, and probably 1 through 7 significant minutes. Is the discrepancy on the NBA side just too much? Is Boston so deep versus Dallas's depth to overcome a 3-1 deficit, whereas in the hockey, Florida's a lot closer, or Edmonton's a lot closer in talent, 1 through 20, rather than, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying here? Is the talent too much swayed in favor of Boston over Dallas, whereas in the hockey series, it's a lot closer?
I can see what you're saying. I mean, look, as great as Luka is, and this is something we went over the NBA Finals preview as well, as great as Luka is, his running mate is not what he once was. While you have to worry about Luka, Kyrie has just not stepped up to be that guy. Even this year. I mean, Kyrie had a good year. He's a good number two, but he's not Draisaitl to McDavid. And when you're Florida, before the series began, you're saying to yourself, how is it possible for us to lose this series? They don't have a better defense. They don't have a better goaltender. What do they have? They don't have more depth. They have more superstars. They have the two big superstars. Where Boston looks at Dallas and says, how can we lose this series? They're not better offensively. They're not better defensively. They don't have home court advantage. They have Luka, and that's it. That's their one. They're not afraid of Kyrie, and they're not afraid of the idea of well, you know what? Kyrie could go off and Luka could go off at the same time. We could be in trouble. No. That's what you worry about if you're Edmonton. If you're Edmonton, you're worried. I'm sorry, I'm Florida. You're worried about the Edmonton 1-2 punch. So, yeah, the lack of depth, sure. But I think it's that top-notch talent. Luka is to McDavid. That's fine. You worry about the big star. But if you shut them down, who's the guy that's going to take advantage? The Boston Celtics are not worried about that secondary guy. I still think Florida has to worry about Draisaitl.
So we're all in agreement. Boston will win tomorrow night, close it out, raise an 18th championship banner in the rafters of the Boston Garden. So, Tom, the big question was, because I wasn't with you guys last week, would Tim watch any of the NBA Finals? You gave me the push. You said, Tim, I think you should do it. It's your team. I didn't watch any. Was it 3 years ago when they lost to Golden State? You said that you thought I might enjoy it because of the team's playing. I did it, Tom. I've watched every game so far. And I'm with you. I'm pleasantly surprised in what I'm watching. Let's put it that way. So am I back 100% with the NBA? I can't say that, but I'm definitely into this series, even though I've had the split screen on. Obviously, baseball takes precedent in my household, but I've had the split screen on, and I'm happy. Even game four, I'm getting blown out. I said, this is what it's like to watch the NBA Finals again. That's how long it's been, Tom.
I'm glad you've been watching. I am. And look, you know, you said, was it dull? I don't think that this Finals has been dull. I think the hockey has, but I don't think the Celtics, even up 3-0, I don't think it was dull, even though if it was an outcome that we kind of expected. The games were relatively good. You know, I wanted to ask you a question, though, going back historically. And I was thinking about this week. And I'm not putting the cart in front of the horse here. I'm not giving the Celtics the tie. Well, sure I am, okay? Let's be honest. Okay? That's what I'm doing. If I got to buy, you know, if it comes back and bites me, whatever. But, Tim, if the Celtics raise the banner this week, or when, probably tomorrow, when they raise it, these two legendary franchises, the Boston Celtics and Los Angeles Lakers, has there ever been a point in the history of this rivalry, quote unquote, in the history of both of these franchises, has there ever been a point where one team is so much higher than the other? I think the Boston Celtics, if they raise their banner, obviously they're the best team in the NBA. They're the best franchise in the NBA. They are set up not only for 1 year win, but they're set up for long-term success with a budding absolute megastar, because he's already a superstar, Jason Tatum. You have multiple stars around them. The Boston Celtics are everything every franchise in the NBA is trying to be, and they'll be crowned champions. On the other side of the coin, you have the laughingstock, the pathetic, the hapless Los Angeles Lakers, a team that made a massive mistake investing their future in a guy that is a bad, just a flat-out bad person, a dragging basketball player who ruined their franchise. They're in a catch-22. Now they have no cap room. And they just got told by a college coach, no, thank you. I'll go back to college. I don't know if there was more of a slap in the face. And I can say this, as pathetic as the Lakers are and as horrible as LeBron James has been, just for that franchise on and off the court and everything else. I mean, LeBron has torched that franchise. Is there a time in history that there has been such a gap between the greatness of the Celtics and the ineptitude of the Lakers?
Are we saying when Boston was good, was LA? Has there been a time when Boston has been good and LA has been really bad? Is that what you're like?
The other way around. I mean, I know the Lakers were good for a while, but was Boston ever this as bad as what the Lakers are facing?
Without looking up Laker stats, I do remember a period of time in the 90s, probably early 90s into the late 90s, that Boston was terrible. I think they missed the playoffs every year but one through almost a 10-year stretch. I don't know what the Lakers did during that time, but so we're going mid-90s thinking about that. That's the only time I can think when Boston was so bad that maybe the Lakers had an opportunity to kind of jump in there and reign supreme. But other than that, we're probably sitting in the era right now, Tom, of where the difference is going to be huge, because unless LA does something, Boston's reloading and reloading every season now. If they extend White, they're all locked up for a good amount of time. And we could be talking about not only this year, Tom, but a couple more championship banners if you want to add to the collection, and extending that lead over the Lakers, which, by the way, I still don't count the 2020 bubble championship as a Laker title. So this might be it, Tom, for Boston over L.A. I'll look up L.A. over Boston, but that's the only time I can think would be mid-90s.
Yeah, and see, even those 90s bad teams that the Celtics had, that's just on the court, right? That's just X's and O's, wins and losses, which, you know, are tough to get over, but you're not a laughingstock. The Lakers are a joke. The Lakers are legitimately a punchline right now, where the Celtics are not only winning. I mean, winning a title is one thing, but you see the future in front of you, like you said. Winning a title is one thing, but seeing the stars, every single thing that the Celtics have done right, the Lakers have done wrong. Every move that the Celtics have done has produced wins, has produced aura, has produced stars, has produced money, has produced attention, has produced, you know, everything that you want. Every decision that the Lakers have made have been horrible. Horrible. I mean, the moment that they went down the LeBron route, the Lakers have been a laughingstock. They've been a disaster. And LeBron James submarined the franchise. Like you said, oh, yeah, you know, the COVID championship. No. Come on. There's not a self-respecting basketball fan out there. And let me go further. There's not a self-respecting sports fan out there that actually includes the LeBron, give it to me, hope for the best championship. It's not included. Nobody counts it. Get out of here. Absolutely not. LeBron has been an utter failure. LeBron has submarined the franchise. LeBron has had multiple coaches fired. Don't tell me he didn't. LeBron has built this roster. Don't tell me he didn't. And now he may force them to draft his son because LeBron runs the franchise. I think that there's no better example of the epitome of what you should do in the NBA, in the Boston Celtics, against the epitome of everything not to do in the Los Angeles Lakers right now.
So, Tom, yes, that era would be, I would say, looking back, at least in our generation, I'll go through the 80s, 90s, 2000s and up. That stretch of time is about an eight-year difference that the Lakers were record-wise, like you said, record-wise better. They made the playoffs every year. And then the beginning of the Phil Jackson era happened around 2000, Shaq, Kobe. And, of course, we know the Lakers won three in a row, including knocking the Celtics out of that one of those times. So that was it. Other than that, when you talk about looking at both franchises and what you just said, yeah, this is going to be a long, rough stretch, I think, for L.A. And you think it's so easy to reload. Well, we can actually kind of meld this together with what I was going to ask you next, that they're out there making fools of themselves. Right? And they don't even have a coach. So who's their coach going to be? They thought, we're the Lakers. We'll get anybody we want, right, Tom? We're going to get the best college coach out there. He straight turned them down, Tom. And I know we had talked about that roughly, but he just straight said, nah, I'll entertain what you're saying, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And then I guess in a roundabout way, he kind of said, they didn't offer me enough for me to leave what I'm in now to go there and deal with that. And when I say that, I sent you a cartoon on social media. I thought, it was hilarious with the whole LeBron and his son situation and those rumors about he wants to play with his kids. So it's a package deal. Tom, those aren't jokes and those aren't rumors for a reason. That's because that's what was actually said. I believe that, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. Everywhere there's a snippet of truth in side jokes, right, Tim? There's a snippet of something. The thing is, look, the Lakers are going to come up with one of two things here, right? You either continue to appease LeBron, which has destroyed your franchise, and continue to go down the road and hope you can milk something left out of him, which probably means drafting his son, which probably means getting more players on his, you know, team that he wants and maybe not great for the franchise. Or you move away from LeBron, which is admitting a giant mistake. LeBron goes somewhere else, brings attention there, and then what are the Lakers left with? Lakers are left with, think about the Lakers roster, you know, and what did it look like without LeBron? They don't have any young talent coming up that is going to take over and kind of just lead this team in that direction. No, they're in a catch-22.
And they're probably going to have a coach with no coaching experience as their coach. If they're saying that LeBron's buddy J.J. Redick's the next coach, Tom, how about that? I mean, that just kind of speaks volumes for what they are.
You know what? LeBron deserves J.J. Redick. Let's just say that. Yeah, I don't even have to elaborate past that. LeBron James deserves J.J. Redick. And guess what? J.J. Redick, you deserve the Lakers.
Hey, man, come on my podcast. Okay. Literally doing the podcast, probably thinking to myself, you know what? You know what, J.J.? You should be the coach of the Lakers. That's what you should be. Why not?
Meaning, I'm the coach. I could boss you around. I could run the team. And you could collect a salary for it. And the minute we start losing, I have now shielded myself from any real criticism because they're going to blame you first and get you fired.
Right. Tom, LeBron is due to make $51 million next year. Anthony Davis will make $43 million, which, oh, by the way, LeBron would be UFA the following season. At that point, Anthony Davis has 3 years left on a contract that paid $280 million. So his Anthony Davis salary in 2 years would be $60 million, then $65 million, then $70 million. You could probably consider there being, unless they rework the cap how they do in the NBA, you never know. But that could be a situation where they jettison that deal as well if it all falls apart, Tom. And then you're, like you said, you're absolutely left with damn near a bare cupboard of superstars at that point. And we could be in for a long rebuild at that then.
It's going to be a while. I honestly believe we're looking at, if everything goes right for the Lakers, I think we're looking at 5 years before they're you know, a threat again. That's a long rebuild, probably closer to 6 or 7 years. I think the Lakers are in a long, long downward spiral, especially in a very, very competitive West and a West that is extremely, extremely young, with, you know, guys like Luka, and extremely dangerous. I think the Lakers are in for a long, 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 we'll say 5, 6, 7 year hiatus here.
One more NBA note, Tom. I saw this pop up, and like I said, the last time I watched the NBA consistently, Klay Thompson was out injured, missing the whole season. I mean, in fact, he missed a few seasons with injuries, and now he's back, and now he's an unrestricted free agent. And the big headline was that, oh, Klay Thompson, he's unfollowed Golden State on his social media, which we all know, right, Tom, regardless of the sport, that is a negotiation tactic. But so I started looking at statistic wise, and I was reading some articles, and apparently in Klay Thompson's free agent season, that they call it, the year before, was like his worst season, Tom, that he's had in years, well over a decade. He was down four, almost 5 points per game from last year alone. And statistically, with shooting percentage, assists, rebounds, all down for his career. I'm not sure his negotiating tactic here, Tom, but alienating the team that you played your whole career with to try to get more money out of them when you had the worst season you've had in well over a decade, I'm not sure that all adds up to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he still can play in the perfect system, right, Tim?
Yeah, shooter's a shooter.
Right, but doesn't have to be the system. Right, I mean, doesn't it have that? That's the thing. I, you know, you need him in that system. That's the only thing that I think, when you're a specialty athlete, and this is in no way to put down a specialty athlete, okay, at all. Devin Hester is probably my favorite football player of all time that I watched consistently through his entire career. Very specialty athlete. But when you're a specialty athlete, meaning you do one thing incredibly well, the rest of your game is good. You have to have this specialty system to go along with it. So, yeah, that's Clay to me.
And that's he's a shooter. That's what he does. They tried the point guard thing when Curry was out, right? When Curry was out with his injuries, they tried the point guard thing with Thompson. It didn't work. Let's face it, at his age now, and he's had a wonderful career. I'm not by any means crapping on Klay Thompson. He's had a wonderful career. He's won numerous championships. But with his age and his injury issues, and like you said, with what he basically is there to do, no NBA team is going to build their offense around Klay Thompson at this point. So he should do what he needs to do. And I get them all. They all want to make more money and get that last contract in, right, Tom? I just don't know if that's the route you want to take. If I'm Klay Thompson, I kind of maybe would want to stay where I'm at and just ride it out, because Golden State, a little hiccup this year, but they're kind of lining up, looking at the roster and the money there that they're going to have here in the offseason. They're kind of lining themselves up for another run.
Yeah, I can't argue. I can't argue with that.
All right. Angel tells me 1 hour is up. We're going to put it in the books when we come back in hour two here on a Super Sunday Night at Heatwave Sports. Tommy and I's favorite topic to speak of, Major League Baseball. We're going to give you a solid dose of some MLB action and where these teams sit as we are moving a month away now from the All-Star Game and halfway point of the season. We'll break it down for you. It's Heatwave Sports here on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, 98.9 FM. Welcome back to Heatwave Sports here on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. Tim Unglesby, Tom Martin, and Angel with you for another hour. Get you through now the middle of June. Tom, it's hot. It's hot out here in Vegas, man. Really hot. I see you had some rain the past couple days ago. So has it begun to boil in New York yet?
Yeah, it has. We had last weekend, we got well into the upper 80s and just about 90s with that still kind of air. But, you know, where it's just, I mean, it's brutal out there. But the last 2 days, it's calmed down. It's been upper 70s. Yeah, it's getting to that point where, yeah, there's a little bit of rain. It's a nice, comfortable. See, I like 101. I mean, give me the 100-degree temperature. But for most everybody else, it's a nice, comfortable atmosphere here in New York.
Yeah, it's comfortably burning up out here. How about that? 102, 104, 105, and it's keep going up. But that's Vegas. We talk about it every year. You've been out here in the summer. You know how it works. And when I speak of burning up, we're halfway through June, Tom. June at Tom Barton Sports has been ridiculous, man. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I am right now on a 14-6 run in the month of June. Absolutely on fire. I mean, just simply on fire. And this happens with baseball. I told everybody, you know, with baseball, for a sports bettor and a professional, it's keep your head above water, hit a couple of underdogs, get that profit every week, get that profit every month, but you're not looking for the splash, but it will come. There's going to come a point where your numbers during the season are going to absolutely explode. Three of the last 4 years, my best winning month was July. And that's what happens. All of a sudden, you go, okay, I have the pitchers, I have the situations, I have the teams, I have what they're batting against lefties, I have what they're doing, you know, in day games, I have what they're doing on their schedule or at home or what. And you put it all together and you could go on these kind of runs. I was above 500. Listen, I was sitting here at 58% before this huge run. So I'm on this huge run. And then you go, okay, well, I haven't bet a lot of games. You go 14-6, and as a matter of fact, something like 25 of the last 35, you're going on a run where in late May into early June, you're on fire. I mean, this is just, the summer is going to explode for Tom Barton Sports. I feel so good about baseball. I feel like I have the handle. You know, you wake up in the morning, Tim, and I do hours and hours and hours of research, And there are some times where you wake up and you go, I kind of know what the research is going to tell me. You know, I know what it's going to spit out, and I know what I'm going to come out to that conclusion. That's when you know you're in the zone. Right now, TomBartonSports.com is in that zone.
Let me ask you this, Tom, real quick. And you know, contrary to popular belief, this is not a sports betting show, which only people that don't listen to the show understand that and just say ridiculous things. But I will ask you a sports betting question because people want to know. There are people that listen to it for facts that they can pick up, and maybe that helps them with their own handicapping, right, Tom? And we're here to help everybody. The bottom line is for all of us to win. You just take a lot of the groundwork out of that. If you don't have time to do that and you're proven successful track record over the last decade plus, I mean, it's just real easy to say, hey, I'm going to open my email and I'm going to have my plays for the day and I'm going to go bet them and I'm going to cash my tickets 70% of the time or 70% of the time, and I'm going to be a happy man, right? Like you said, you're not buying brand new cars, but you're paying that car payment every month if you do it right. So, like, for instance, today, right, Tom? I took Corbin Burns, the relatively low favorite. And yes, it was against a good team in the Phillies. But I think it's safe to say, right, Tom, if when you're looking at breaking these down all the time, you're looking at the numbers, you're looking at the lines, if you have a pitcher that who we you and I both feel that he's, if he's not the best pitcher in baseball, he's right there. Why, with a team that can score runs like the Baltimore Orioles do, and they can score him in bunches, why would you not play him in most cases every time he pitches, right, Tom? If he's on a run, why would you not ride that run regardless of what the money line's going to be? Because it's supposed to be about winning, Tom. It's not looking for the biggest dog every day. It's not saying, oh, well, 170 is too much for me. Why is that too much? A win is a win, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you said it, you ride it out. With a pitcher like that, you could also go both ways and you go, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to hedge my bet because Corbin Burns is not allowed 4 runs in a game yet this year. Right. So, you know what? Maybe I'll take Corbin Burns and I'll take the team total under of the team that he's playing. Right. And you don't have to lay the 170, 180 if you don't want to. You can mess with things in baseball. You can take different areas. You can take team total under and combine it. You can do all kinds of stuff. Look, the guy I was on today was Mitchell Parker, right? Mitchell Parker has been a cash cow for me this year. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows his name. Washington plays well with him. They have a tremendous, tremendous back end of the bullpen. So I'm not worried about that with Finnegan and Harvey. And even look, you know, the other guys like Floro and whatnot, they have a good bullpen. They are generally not going to give a lot of money. They were minus 120 today. Why? Because they're the Washington Nationals. They're under 500. Going up against a Miami Marlins team that is the second worst team in the league batting against lefties. So what I did today was I said, you know what? I'm going to bank on Mitchell Parker, and I'm going to take the under because I don't think the Marlins are going to score too much. So you get your double bang for your buck, and you can do that when you have hot pitchers and guys that either go deep into the game or have a nice bullpen behind them, which you said it, Corbin Burns does both.
Be the same with when you speak of Washington, right, Tom? But you liked them preseason. You had them sneaking into the playoffs as a wild card. And that's a young baseball team that's built their team up through, obviously, through trades, right, Tom? They banked on getting these prospects back. The Soto deal was a big one. When you look at Abrams and Gore specifically, they came over there. But when you look at, you said you were talking about the pitcher today. I think if you're listening and you're looking at it, Irvin's another guy, right, Tom, that's pitched solid all year for them that really gets no respect when the lines come out. And Irvin's another guy that if you've been betting him, you've made money.
Yeah, you have quite a bit. And you know, from being in fantasy leagues with me, you know, I jumped on those Washington guys. I like that. Look, that's what I do like about baseball. You can take, and look, it's all sports, but in baseball, you can just follow specific pitchers. And it's almost regardless of how their team is pitching, you can follow them. And you could go down that hole. Look, Reese Olson is somebody. I'm not betting him in his next start, right? But Reese Olson was cruising right along on the season. He was dominating everybody in his path. He was 1-7. And you're going, okay, how do I capitalize on a guy with under a 2 ERA, but he's 1-7? Well, you take the unders, right? And then all of a sudden, Reese Hulson, in the game, one of the games, came up, didn't look so good. The announcers mentioned, wonder if he got hurt. Next three starts, he's allowed more runs than he has all year long. Well, now is the time to start fading Reese Hulson. You know, there are times where when you're betting on sports, specifically on baseball, you see the tide turn, but the general public doesn't, so the lines don't reflect it quite yet. We're talking about that with Mitchell Parker, Jake Irvin, but even a Corbin Burnes. I still don't believe people have caught on to the fact that the Baltimore Orioles might be second, maybe third best team in all of baseball. Corbin Burnes is the best pitcher in baseball, and they're still giving you a value of under 2-1 on him seemingly regularly. Mm-hmm.
One more, Tom. As you know, over on the X, I don't put up a play every day because I just don't like something. If I don't like a play, I just don't post it. But when I do like something, I put it up. And my last play was on Friday, and I took the Angels plus $1.30 at San Francisco. And when I posted it, a guy side messaged me, and he was being tongue in, right? He was joking. He said, going with the hometown team, calling me a homer, essentially, right? And I get it. I'm an Angels fan, and I take out the home part of it. If being a homer for anything, it's more Orioles, because I know with that offense that no lead is safe when you have the Baltimore offense that can put you right back in a game. Whereas with the Angels, as we've seen over the years about that, if they go down and put like 3, 4, 5 runs, they're not coming back to win that game. But my handicap on it, Tom, was that they had Tyler Anderson pitching, and by far their ace, by far probably somebody who will be gone next month in a trade somewhere to a contender. And he, in 4 of his last 5 starts, he had given up just 1 run, right? Now, his last start, he did give up 4 runs against Kansas City. But I went back more so on the feeling, the gut feeling, that consistently this year he's been solid. And I felt that at the value I was getting, plus 130, even though they were on the road, they were going up against a young pitcher in Howard with the Giants. And the Angels, if one thing offensively, they hit home runs. And you've seen that in this series. They can hit the long ball in that park. It was a gut feeling, and I liked that value more so than I liked any other game. So sometimes as a bettor, right, Tom, if you're really crunching everything, things stand out to you, you have to take a chance. And I figured at plus money, the worst I could do was lose a unit rather than lose multiple units betting on a high dog favorite or a high favorite that maybe I wasn't so sure about. It wasn't a Corbin Burnes pitching for me that would have been an easier pick for me. So sometimes you do have to like kind of just go with your gut, right, Tom? I mean, everything about betting involves so many variables, but sometimes gut does play a little tune in, especially if it's a team you know about.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if it's a team that you're involved in and following. My biggest piece of advice when doing sports betting is, you know, grab a conference in college basketball and know more about that conference than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Grab a division in the NFL, know about that more than anybody else. Grab, you know, 2 or 3 teams in Major League Baseball and know about them more than anyone else. And if you just narrow your field. So when you start watching, for example, look, I've been on Mitchell Parker and Irvin a ton this year. So I watch a lot more Washington Nationals games than probably anybody else that's not a Washington Nationals fan. So I'm going to have my pulse on that team. Whereas I really haven't made many Seattle Mariner bets this year. I just haven't done it. It hasn't been appealing to me. So, yeah, like you said, sometimes your gut is better than going with just the pure statistics because you feel more in tune with that team. Oh, man, this team looked tired out there. You're not going to read that in a box score, but maybe you could see it on the field. You could see them dragging. The New York Yankees were a great fade spot this weekend. In the month of June, everybody but 2 players on their team has an OPS that is falling, and I mean falling fast over the last 14 days. They've been in a tough stretch. Their bullpen's been used a little bit. So, yeah, they're a good fade spot. You might not know that by looking at the Yankees as, oh, look, the best spot in baseball going to Boston. But, yeah, this was This was a rough road trip. Myself and Chris were talking about it a little bit on texting here because, you didn't see it coming. But you didn't see it coming if you were anybody else. But if you follow the Yankees day in, day out, see their routine, see their batting practice, no guys are banged up and everything else, yeah, it wasn't all that shocking. That's the pulse of the team, like you mentioned.
Speaking of the Yankees and speaking of the Orioles, Tom, that'll be the highlight series of the week. They begin a three-game set in New York on Tuesday. You said you're going to the Thursday matinee matchup. This is what we called this. We're not Nostradamus at all, but we called this beginning of the year that this would be the American League Championship Series. So far, we're holding pat with that. The Yankees with a game and a half lead over the Orioles heading into this week's play, and they played earlier in the year. As you remember, the Orioles took 2 of 3 in Baltimore. I have no doubt, Tom, that these three games are going to be great.
Yeah, they should be fantastic. I think that the Orioles are catching the Yankees at the right time. A lot of guys are slumping. The Yankees are limping around. They're banged up. The Yankee bullpen, like I said, has been excellent, but they're getting a little long in the tooth. And I feel like the Yankees are in a position where they're sort of hanging on to the fact that, okay, we're going to get a bump here soon. A couple of guys are coming. Dominguez is eventually coming. Gerrit Cole is eventually coming. But they're also dealing with Rizzo went down, which might be a blessing in disguise. LeMahieu still hasn't hit his stride yet. A couple of guys are scuffling, and the Orioles are on the other side of it. The Orioles are right now rolling right along. But I mentioned this to you, Tim. While they look really good against Philly, and everything is rolling right for Baltimore, they lost Kyle Bradish to the same UCL that has been a problem, the same UCL that is kind of bringing Gerrit Cole back and everyone said would be another problem. And you go, man, is this a blessing in disguise, Tim? Because now they have to go get a starter. They can't rely upon having Bradish and a healthy Bradish in that rotation. They're losing starters. They've lost Wells for the year. They've lost Bradish now for who knows how long. They've lost Means for the year. I mean, they can't just keep stringing this together with guys like Pavich, right?
They lost Dean Kremer. He's out as well. Right. The rotation has got Pavich and Suarez, guys that aren't supposed to be in that rotation. Irvin's been solid this year. I did notice that you avoid Burns and Rodriguez in this series, Tommy. You don't get Grayson or Corbin, so advantage Yankees. I was reading now, and I don't know, maybe you have confirmation on this, but the rumor is Gerrit Cole is going to start Wednesday against the Orioles.
That would be really cool. I'm hoping that would be it. Look, every single time that I turn around, I hear that, you know, Gerrit Cole is making progress. Gerrit Cole is, moving up. Gerrit Cole wants to do this, wants to do that. I'm hoping that the Yankees don't rush him, but they said midweek target. Look, I'm not sure if it's a great spot to throw him in against the Orioles, but I get it. It's at home. You want to get him started. You want to get him in there. It's hard to keep Cole off the mound if Cole doesn't want to come off the mound.
So the Yankees did confirm Nestor Cortes will pitch game one, and Luis Gill will pitch game three. Tom, the game you're going to go to with Tommy. And Wednesday is a question mark, but it's possible that could be Gerrit Cole, and I would assume, Tom Wright, he would be on some type of a pitch count anyways.
Yeah, definitely a pitch count. Who do you guys have going game three? Who do you guys have for Thursday?
Cole Irvin.
Maybe Irvin? Oh. Yeah. I like my chances to see a win with Gill against Irvin, I got to be honest.
Yeah. What about the rest of that division, Tom? Nothing, right? Nothing. It's a two-team race. We knew that already.
Yeah, look, I thought that the Rays were taking a big step back this year, not only because of their style of play, but you lose guys like they do. They don't have the depth. You know, you can replace guys, sure, but you lose Shane McClanahan like they did, who's the ace of your staff, and you lose, Shane Baz still isn't back. Then you lose, I know it's a bad situation, but you lose your top offensive player, Wander Franco. I thought that the Rays would kind of have a step back this year. I didn't expect the spiral that we're seeing. The Blue Jays, are almost in sell mode. We're hearing maybe Vladimir Guerrero to the Yankees. We don't want him, by the way, just letting you know. But maybe Vladimir Guerrero to the Yankees. We're hearing Bo Bichette might be on the move. The Blue Jays are game under 500, and they're thinking about selling. That'll tell you the mentality of their team. Boston is doing much better than I believed, and it's not just because of this weekend. I thought Boston's pitching was just going to be their complete and utter undoing this year. Bello has looked good. Criswell has looked good in spots. They've got a couple guys. Tanner Houck looks great. And now they're two games over 500. Boston is a team that I believe if they get a little close, we have to start worrying about. Not maybe to take the division. They're 12 games back. But you go, man, in the playoffs, do you want to face the Boston Red Sox with a Tanner Houck and a Brian Bello back-to-back? They also have young stars. Guys like Devers is still young and Duran is still young. And they have some guys. The Boston Red Sox, and it pains me to say, are increasingly becoming an uh-oh concern at this point.
They haven't been good in years, Tom, right? It's been a few years since they've been at that point. And they have a lot of injury issues with the pitching as well, and which seems to be all across Major League Baseball, so it's not anything different. I'm just saying, I noticed when I look at their IL, there's a lot of arms on there. And as the Blue, I wanted to touch on the Blue Jays.
But Tim, they just took four of the last five games they've won against Philly and the Yankees and put up eight or more runs in all four wins.
Right. Home games, though, right?
Yeah, all home games.
Yeah. Real quick on the Blue Jays, Tom. Biggio gone now. He's a Dodger. You mentioned Vlad. I wouldn't be surprised if Bichette's name's thrown in the mix as well. You try to get what you can get. But is this a matter of that when you're looking at the current regime of in the front office, that Toronto historically in the last, this goes 5 to 7 years, has always been, this is the year, Tom. This is your Toronto overtakes the East, and we begin the Blue Jay Renaissance, and it just hasn't gotten there.
It hasn't gotten there, and their core guys are coming up to decision-making time. That's why we're hearing that maybe Vladimir Guerrero is on the move. They stockpiled minor leaguers that me and you were kind of high on that have not materialized to the point that we thought. The Alex Manoahs are the obvious guys, the Pearsons. I know they have a lefty and Tiedemann coming up. They haven't materialized quickly, though. So the pitching hasn't quite gotten there that quickly. And the offense, when you build an offense around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, and they both just woefully disappointed, you're going to be in some trouble. Springer is on the other side of it. They got rid of Chapman during the year. I mean, the Blue Jays are in a tough spot because look, a 3-4 game winning streak, and all of a sudden they're back in this thing. That's all they need. But you go, what are we really going to do? Gausman's getting a little bit older. Bissett, is Chris Bassett, is he a guy that you're looking at as a number two to take you to the World Series? No. So I think they're in a weird position. It's a position that my Chicago Bears were in for a long time there, where good enough to put a fear in you that they're going to kind of be a playoff team, never good enough to think that they're going to go to the Super Bowl, and not bad enough to just blow it all up. And I think that the Blue Jays are in that spot where I'm seeing them talk about maybe Bichette and Guerrero going, and you go, how do you blow up a team that's only one game under 500? Can you really blow up that roster? I don't know. I mean, I think they should, but I think it's going to be tough for that Blue Jays franchise to blow up a roster like that.
And what's the expected return, right, Tom? I know Vladdy Jr., look, last year was not a good year for him. This year, it's nothing like he was 3-4 years ago. So I would think that most teams are looking at it like, if you want to go get Vlad Jr. for the middle of your lineup, you're not paying what you were to have paid 3 years ago.
Is Vlad Guerrero in the middle of your lineup, Tim?
Not in our lineups, no. But
right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not saying he's bad, right? I mean, but we need to stop looking at Vlad Guerrero as a guy you just immediately plug into that, number 3-4 hole. He's a very solid player. He's putting up numbers that are solid numbers, but he's absolutely not that guy that you look at and you go, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, throw him in the middle of my lineup and feel great about it. Look, let's talk about the Yankee lineup because he has been, you know, connected with the Yankees. 284 average, 7 home runs, 30 RBIs, right? You're not putting him in the Soto and you know, Judge category at all, right? I mean, he's just not going to be there. So, okay, let's look at where he would fit in a Yankee lineup, let's just say. He's not going to bat 1, that's Volpe. Soto's 2, Judge's 3. Okay, is he going for Stanton or Verdugo? I don't know, maybe. To me, he's like a 5 batter at this point in his career, and the same thing with Baltimore. So if we're looking at him as a 5 batter, he's still 25 years old. I get it. He's a limited defensive player. I know that Toronto tried to display him at third base, but he's a limited defensive player, meaning he just plays first base and probably should be a DH. His numbers are solid across the board, but I'm not paying through the nose. For example, Tim, if you're looking at, you know, the Yankees farm system, the Baltimore farm system, two of the better farm systems out there, are you giving up a package that is highlighted around Jackson Holliday for Vladimir Guerrero?
No way.
Right. It's not even on the table for you. So you're talking about maybe a Heston, maybe a Stowers. I would even balk on maybe a Mayo would be kind of in there in a package. For the Yankees, yeah, listen, if you guys want to sit back and you want to start having a conversation about a guy like a Durham, maybe an Augustus Ramirez, yeah, you can have that conversation. The Yankees are hanging up the phone and laughing at you if you want to talk about Jason Dominguez or Spencer Jones. You're not getting those guys. So Vladimir Guerrero can be dangled out there, and he can certainly make an impact on a team, but the return is not going to be, quote-unquote, Vladimir Guerrero-type return. They're better off hoping that they could turn it around this year, but I think that they should sell because I don't believe that they will turn it around, and I think that Vladimir Guerrero is what he is. I don't see an MVP in his future. I see a very, very solid player, solid career that might have weight problems down the line. He might have injury problems down the line. And although he's 25 years old, he's a limited option. He's a guy that I look at right now as a 280, 285 hitter, 20, 25 homers, you know, 80, 85 RBIs. Great. Put it in the middle of the lineup, very solid. But for a team like the Yankees and Orioles, he's not really cracking the middle of the lineup. But if you go down the trough a little bit and you go, does he help a team like the Cubs? Oh, absolutely. Right? I mean, yeah. You start talking about a team like the Cubs that needs the offense and you go, yeah, he helps there. Does he help a team, you know, that's kind of in the mix like maybe a Cleveland? Oh, yeah. He could certainly help a Cleveland. So a Seattle? Yeah. I think it depends on who you're talking about where he bats, but he's no longer Vladimir Guerrero, superstar, put him in the middle of a lineup and not worry about it, and let's overpay for him. That guy just doesn't exist.
I actually think Seattle would be a great destination for him. He offensively, you have to look. So if you look at that lineup with Julio and what's the catcher's name, Tom, in Seattle?
Oh, Raleigh, Cal Raleigh.
Raleigh, Julio, Vlad, that's pretty formidable middle of the line if you want to go that route. Obviously, France is a better defensive first baseman, but other than average, he's not going to give you what Vlad potentially could. And the thing with Vlad is, for me, is you said his stats, 7 home runs, 30 RBIs, and we're about halfway through. That's significantly down now from years past at this rate. And I know you can hit homers in bunches. I get it. But he went from 48 to 32 to 26 in the last 3 seasons, long ball. I don't know what it is. He's still a young guy. Like you said, he's what, 25, 26 years old. I guess.
I have the answer, Tim. You know,
steroids?
No. It's an honest, concrete answer. It really is. So the year that he hit 48 home runs, if you remember, I gave it out on the air. I showed my ticket on Twitter and everything else. Before the year, I took a stab at him at tremendously good odds, at more than 20-1 odds, that he would lead the league in home runs that year, and he tied with Salvi Perez. If you remember why I did that, it'll tell you where he got the 48. Because he was playing half of his games in Dunedin, Florida. Dunedin, Florida is a launching pad. It is, you know, they were calling it Coors in Florida. And I've been to the stadium, been to the area. I was there during COVID and people talking about how Vlad was going to destroy. Look at this home road splits that season and what he did at Dunedin. It wasn't all that unusual. He's actually switched his swing approach. He's a guy that in the minor leagues, they always said, would he have enough power because he hit the ball into the ground so much. And then you look at his statistics in Major League Baseball. He hits the ball on the ground at a crazy rate. I mean, it's just, it is for a power hitter, quote unquote, it's really, really concerning rate. But when he was in Dunedin and he had the season in Dunedin, he changed his launch angle knowing it was a small ballpark with a big launch, with a easy launch angle. I made a ton of money that year on him. He had 48 that year. It didn't surprise me. It didn't surprise anybody that was paying attention to the ballpark he was in. But now he's playing in Major League ballparks, Tim. And yeah. And all of a sudden, he went back to going, okay, well, I don't have the, you know, the launching pad that is this Dunedin Stadium, so I'm going to go back to my approach that was in the minor leagues. And this is the guy that he was in the minor leagues. High batting average, lots of contact, but he hits the ball on the ground too much. Will he ever go out there and hit a 35 home run again? I'm not sure. To me, he's more of a 20-25 home run type of guy that changed his approach for the stadium he was in for one season.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And look, he's not his dad, right? He's a different ball player.
Yeah, well, he's clearly not his father, who, you know, was a threat on the bases as much as he was everywhere else. I mean, his dad was a... just an explosive athlete. Guerrero's a good hitter. I wouldn't call him an athlete.
AL Central, Cleveland, 5-game lead over Kansas City, 5.5 over the Twinkies. Tom, Cleveland still, you talk about home baseball field advantage. Cleveland, the only team in Major League Baseball that has not lost 10 games on their home field yet.
Yeah. Cleveland at home. Really quick, I just want to... I will go back to Cleveland. Let me just give out the statistic because I had to bring it up because it is alarming. When you talk about that year of 48 home runs, Tim, right? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in Dunedin in 2021 had a .328 batting average, 31 home runs, 69 RBIs, 70 runs scored in 80 games at home. 31 of his 48 home runs came at home. So, yeah, at a higher 70 runs and seven, almost 69 RBIs, almost 70 RBIs, all at home, .328 at home in a tiny, tiny ballpark. But, yeah, let's get on to Cleveland. I'm shocked. I have no answers for this Indians team. I really don't. I counted them out for the last 2 years. The last 2 years, they proved me wrong. This year, I said, all right, you lost Shane Bieber. You lost Gavin Williams. There's no way that you're going to be able to sustain anything. They came back and sustained, Tim. I mean... This Indians team, they're fun to root for because you just don't even know where it's coming from outside of Jose Ramirez. You know, you go, where is this offense coming from? Where is the guys that you should be worried about? I know Naylor and Kwan are decent players and Jimenez is a decent player. But you look around that roster and you go, find me an all-star. I mean, find me an all-star outside of Jose Ramirez. You might not find one, but they are the epitome of team. They have a really good bullpen, really good bullpen. Good back end, starters that are solid. It's just not filled with superstars, and it's hard for us to get our heads around the idea that there's not superstars and they're still in first place.
On the Royals, a bet on was Seth Lugo for most of the year, right, Tom? You and I rode that. I jumped off the Yankee start, Tom. I didn't trust. I wanted to see what he would do, and they beat him up a little bit. So his last start was Saturday at the Dodgers, at L.A. I didn't do it, Tom. I should have. But he was a healthy plus, what, 150 at L.A.? And I didn't know if maybe it hit that part where we were all waiting for the wheels to come off. But Has he reestablished himself, Tom, as a bet on again? That still disrespecting Seth Lugo, man.
Rob Mish texted me because we've been together just cashing on Lugo week after week. And he texted me and he said, you know, what do you think of Lugo in L.A.? I basically just said, look, I keep waiting for the wheels to fall off. And if they were going to fall off, it was going to be against the Dodgers. So I was laying off. He said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to lay off too. We all missed the opportunity because we still were doubting Seth Lugo. how can you not? I mean, look, it's fun what he's doing, and it's great. It really is. He keeps proving us wrong. But I still get the feeling that when all is said and done, Tim, he's going to end up with an ERA that is in the mid-threes to upper threes as opposed to the mid-twos and upper twos where he's kind of lived this entire year. I say the wheels are going to fall off. Maybe the wheels don't completely fall off, but I certainly can't see him keeping this pace. But it's fun while it lasts, right? And the Royals are a fun team while they last, but they are a team that I think everything's going to fall apart for quickly. Outside of, Lugo, they have some interesting arms, but nobody I'm counting on in late September because of innings limits. Their bullpen has been generally a disaster. I mean, James McArthur's leading the team with saves. He's looked good for a lot of the year, but his numbers are not great. But he's not losing the closer's job because there's nobody behind him doing anything with Will Smith and Stratton and Schreiber and everybody else. So, you know, you start to look at this Royals team and you peel back the layers and you go, Bobby Witt might want to be one of the top five best players in baseball. Salvi Perez is going to the Hall of Fame with his offense. Oh, wait, there's nobody after that. The Royals are also not in a position, I think, to make a big move, and they might need to.
AL West, Seattle now, an 8.5-point lead, 8.5-game lead over the Rangers after this weekend's Seattle sweep. So they're 43-31, Tom, and that's with J-Rod not having an all-star year, I'd put it that way. And Texas, World Series hangover, right, man? 500 games, and just you never know what you're going to get. And that's an offense that you would think comes to play, but a lot of times, 1, 2, 3 runs from that offense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, the offense is built to just be absolutely explosive. You look around the field and you go, you know, where are we making a correction here? You know, where are you finding somebody to replace who you have that is going to be better on the field for Texas? It's not their pitching. Their pitching is fine. Their bullpen has been fine. I mean, David Robertson's a revelation right now. Their bullpen's been fine. Their pitching's been fine. Their offense can't get it going, and you have tremendous players. And I get it. Look, Evan Carter didn't live up to the expectations. He's been banged up. Wyatt Langford didn't live up to expectations so far. He's been banged up. I get it. You could blame Corey Seager hasn't been on the field. There's a lot of excuses. But when you look up and down that lineup, it's shocking how they can't put it together with the talent when you look at a Cleveland lineup that doesn't have the talent, but they're putting it together.
When we come back from our final timeout here on Heat Wave Sports, we'll look at the National League side of Major League Baseball as we get you ready for a new work week Monday morning, 20 minutes away. Stay with us. It's the last stretch here on Heat Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Take you through the rest of your Sunday night, Father's Day, here on Heatwave Sports. We are back at it both nights next week, Tom, Saturday and Sunday, right here on Fox Sports Radio. Look at the National League ledger. Over in the East, Philadelphia has opened up an 8-game lead over the Braves, Tom, as the Braves just riddled with injuries with the pitching staff and the bats. Philadelphia may run away with this here come all by the All-Star break. Your Washington Nationals 12 out, but right in the mix of the wild card. In fact, Tom, there are almost a dozen teams within two games of the wild card in the National League, and the majority of them are all under 500.
Yeah, it's rough out there right now, right? I mean, the separation will happen, but they're all bundled up right now. Let me ask you this, Tim. Just to really quick on the East, does it matter? I mean, honestly, if you're the Braves, do you even care about the regular season or trying to win the division at this point? Or are you just like, listen, let's just get our team in position to get to the postseason, because once the postseason comes, we know where we're going to be. So does it matter if they finish behind Philly and Philly runs away with it? I don't think it does.
I'll say that one more time. I'm sorry.
Meaning, I don't think it matters at all if the Braves, you know, finish 12 games out, 15 games out, 10 games out, 5 games. It doesn't matter if Philly runs away with it. For the Braves, no. It should just be get healthy, get ready to go for the postseason. I wouldn't even worry about anything else but getting healthy and getting my team in a good position. So if Philly runs away with it, who cares? We're still a playoff team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And how many times have we seen a wild card team win the World Series? I mean, you play the games, you finish in position, and then you play the games again. So yeah, you're right. And in fact, if you want to talk about deadlines, we know Philadelphia does not have a problem being active, but I think you need to see, or you'll see Atlanta kick the tires as well, Tom. They need some adjustments and some upgrades, especially in the staff.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think Atlanta's main job here is to stay competitive, but make sure that you pinpoint the areas that must be addressed. You know, you need some clear areas. And maybe it's just not Atlanta's year. Olsen's slumping. Acuna's injured. Their whole staff is injured. I mean, maybe it's just not their year. But I still think you put yourself in a position. Like you said, Philadelphia is always kind of in that spot. Don't let Philly get the guy that you need. Philly's going to make their moves. Don't let them get the guy that you need, because you do need quite a bit.
About the Central, Tom. Brewers 6.5 up on the Cardinals, who are now 500. And we kind of talked about the Cardinals. They're a completely different team here in the last 2 months than they were in the first two. Cincinnati 8, Pittsburgh 8, Cubs 8.5. But like I said, all those teams are within a game and a half of the play of the second wild card.
Yeah, look, I don't know who is going to take over there, Tim. I don't know who's going to wind up winning that division. To me, it's whoever makes that important move. And we keep talking about trades because I do think that when you're that close, the separator is there. The Brewers are out in front of it. They are getting Devin Williams back. But do you feel comfortable with a Brewers and a staff that is starting to kind of just fall? I mean, their entire staff is falling. The Cardinals are finally back to 500. They're back up there. I don't feel good about them. They still might be in sell mode. The Reds are 3 games back. Pirates are 3 games back. I don't think either one of them, and I'll say both of those teams, I'm not sure they're ready to make the move. The team that's in the cellar, the team that's in dead last place, Tim, that might be the team that's ready to make the move. When we talk about Vladimir Guerrero, I think he would look good in a Cubs uniform.
Mm-hmm. Probably up that home run total a little bit playing there as well, Tom.
Yeah, go get that Dunedin back.
In the West, Dodgers, 8 games up on the Pods, 8.5 on the D-backs and the Giants. I really don't know what to say other than, look, we already knew the Dodgers are winning this division, so do you see anything out of those 3 teams that I just mentioned, it's possible or highly probable that the Dodgers are the only team out of that division that makes the playoffs.
Tim, Mookie Betts went down with a fracture today. I know that the Dodgers are a machine. I get it. But they're only 8 games up. They've lost quite a bit. Mookie Betts is their best player. Yes, you Ohtani people. Mookie Betts is their best player. That hurts defensively. That hurts offensively. If there is a window to catch the Dodgers, here it is. Mookie Betts is out. He's banged up. I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but it certainly sounds like it's going to be a quite some time here. Fractured left hand. Tim, if there's a window, this is the window to catch the Dodgers right now. But they take on the Rockies for 4, the Angels for 2, the White Sox for 3. So there's a window, but man, the schedule is just way in their favor for the next 2 weeks or so.
What do you think? Look, we are, a month away from deadline. Some of these teams, like we talked about, have to make adjustments now. And why wait? Why mess around, right, Tom? If you can do it, I think you got to do it now. Be ahead of the curve, not wait for everything to happen and then get a side deal worked on you at the deadline and you don't get what you need. I think they're smart. The front offices that are smart, they'll get something done now.
Yeah, I keep imagining I'm going to wake up and we're going to see a big move. There's always that one team that gets out in front of it. Cubs make sense. The Giants have a history of kind of getting out in front and making that move. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Twins make a move like that. And I think the Astros, not that they're desperate, but I think the Astros are in a position where they're going to be searching. And if they're going to make a move, I think if the Astros make a move, it's going to be sooner rather than later.
Orioles, Yankees. What do they do? Wait.
Yankees are going to wait to get Gerrit Cole back, but they have to do something with the right side of their infield. Torres and Rizzo are not going to last as playoff available players that you're going to count on. Now, Rizzo got injured today, so maybe that forces kind of their hand. I wouldn't expect to see both of those guys starting a game in the playoffs. So I think they go get some kind of help there. You can't keep running out Torres, LeMahieu, and Rizzo and expect different results. So I think you get a bat while everyone's looking at pitching. I think the Yankees go get a bat, and depending on Cole, maybe they look for an arm, but they have to get a left-handed reliever. Tanner Scott makes a lot of sense. As for the Orioles are in a position, they are very, very clear. Go get a top-notch pitcher. You know, go get a guy that at the very least is a three, because come playoff time, Burns is your one. You don't need a one. You could slot Rodriguez as a two, although you'd probably prefer him as a three. That means they don't have to go pay through the nose, but the Orioles absolutely need a pitcher, and I would say two. I would say they need an innings eater and then a pitcher. Jesus Lazardo makes a lot of sense for the Baltimore Orioles. So I'll say the New York Yankees. I don't think they go get a Pete Alonso, but maybe a Pete Alonso type of guy. And for the Orioles, Jesus Lazardo makes a lot of sense.
A few weeks back, we had talked about with the problems Craig Kimbrell was having. In fact, he was removed from the closer spot for about a week, got put back into it. He's been pretty solid since then, Tom. But you mentioned Tanner Scott. He's a former Oriole. I heard his name mentioned in the mix. I think you'll see the Orioles add an arm into the bullpen as well.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting who gets that lefty. The Yankees need one. The Orioles need one. The Tanner Scott sweepstakes, I don't think anybody thought it was going to be a hotly contested sweepstakes, but it's looking to be that. The Yankees have to go get a bat, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a first baseman. I know, you know, you have your Rizzo apologists out there, but he just hasn't looked good. Since the injury, since the knee to the head, he has not looked like the same Anthony Rizzo, and that includes on the field. And Gleyber Torres has to be out the door. I mean, he just has to be. The Yankees, if they want to be a serious World Series contender, cannot roll out the defense of Gleyber Torres time and time again. His offense is fine, and he's come around, and he looks actually really good over the last 30 days offensively. But his defense is just absolutely pathetic.
On a close here, Tom, let me ask you this. Ronel Blanco from Houston pitched a no-hitter on April the 1st. Today, against Chris Wynn's Detroit Tigers, he had a no-hitter through 7. Houston manager pulled him. He had 94 pitches at that point, Tom. They pulled him. This is the third time this year I've seen a starting pitcher get pulled with a no-hitter through at least 7. They think one was maybe 6. The other two were 7s. One pitcher had 100 pitches. The other two were in the 90s. Are we playing it too safe at this point now, or am I just overblowing an individual type accomplishment when I should be looking at the team aspect of it?
No, I'm glad that you didn't say, are we getting to a point where we're overblowing? Because we're well past that. We're years past the point of babying and taking care. And it's awful. It's bad for the game. It's bad for the players. It's bad for the psyche. It's bad for the club. It's bad for everything. It just is. They're being way too cautious, way too easy, way too much, hey, let's protect the players. Yeah, you want to protect them. I get that. I do. I understand it. But there are certain points in an athlete's career they need that push. They need that moment to draw back on, and this is one of them. And, Tim, I know you said you were going to end the show on it. I know you won't do it, but I'm going to bash Las Vegas, the selection committee for high school, because I'm looking at this kid here from the Meadows. A guy hits .461 with 45 RBIs and 44 runs scored, and he only makes second team, Tim. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, but I'm pretty upset about this. He's clearly a first-team player.
100% first-team player.
How Aiden do you pronounce O'Tano. That name?
Aiden O'Tano.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that jumped out at me, and I want to take a little problem here with Las Vegas Selection Committee. It doesn't make any sense with those kind of outstanding numbers. I hear he had 6 bombs as well. Great numbers, great kid, absolutely fantastic, and somehow or another doesn't make first team. I think there's a little politicking going on, Tim. You don't have to say it, but I'll be the one to say it.
Vegas media, man. What can you say? Vegas media. He had a wonderful season, no doubt about it, a wonderful career at the Meadows. He left the Meadows as the all-time statistical leader in offensive categories there. So now he goes to college. So wonderful, wonderful career for him.
Absolutely. It has been a joy to be able to watch it through the lens that I've been able to watch it as well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tommy. I know I blew up your guys' text feeds with videos all the time, but I will be there for you when it's Tommy's turn as well, my friend.
We're going to be talking swimming, Tim, so.
He is a hell of a swimmer. Hell of a swimmer.
He has not lost a race yet in his young career. First place every time.
Tell us about first place Tom Barton Sports as we get out of here, Tom.
Guys, go check it out. It's TomBartonSports.com. Like I said, 14-6 this month. I am on an absolutely ridiculous 25 of the last 35 streak at TomBartonSports.com. You sign up now. I am going to give you until August 1st. So you're going to get every single play until August 1st. No upgrades, no commission. Go check it out, guys. Sign up at TomBartonSports.com.
Tom, we're going to be enjoying the Oriole-Yankee series. Winner of the series is bragging rights next weekend as we're on both nights. So I know you're going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it as well. And we'll talk to you Saturday night.
I'll be texting you some photos from live from the game on Thursday afternoon. Have a good one, everybody.
For Tommy Barton, TomBartonSports.com. Make sure you check out the website. Angel, always a solid, solid job here on a Super Sunday night. Tim Ungles, we have a great sports week. We will talk to you on Saturday at 10 o'clock right here on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. Have a good one.